5, our workshop. Mr. Clamp.
Good morning, Chairman Hale, members of the board.
Good morning.
For the record, my name's Robert Clamp. I'm the chief of the Timber Harvest and Hunt Point Source Division for the Regional Water Board. We're here today to discuss a waiver of waste discharge requirements for the U.S. Forest Service regarding activities associated with non-point source discharges.
Can everybody see the screen okay? Good. Thanks.
I'd like to emphasize that today is a workshop. There is no board action today. The purpose is to present the waiver and collect any input that we can. It's an early opportunity. What we'll do with the comment we get is go back, make any changes to the waiver that we feel are necessary, and do a release with a CEQA package. We're shooting for April 13th, and that would be a 30-day comment period that would end on May 17th. Then we would take the comments from that period, compile them, do a response to comments, make any more changes to the waiver that are appropriate in preparation for a hearing to consider adoption on June 10th in Santa Rosa. Just briefly go through the board's agenda package. What you have in your package is the executive officer's summary report, the usual green sheets, the proposed waiver and its attachments, and then the public notice that was put out for this workshop. What I'd like to do is give you a little bit of background on the previous waiver that we have with the U.S. Forest Service. Talk a bit about the planning framework for U.S. Forest Service, their guidance and standards. The waiver is based largely on those, and we've added a few things in addition, and then get into the actual detail of the waiver, and then we'll take comments. As I mentioned, we had a waiver. Actually, it's still in effect as the board renewed it in order to allow us to modify and create this new waiver. The previous waiver was for timber harvest activities only, but that included such things as fuel reduction, fuel breaks, roads, those sorts of things associated with timber harvest. Like the proposed waiver, it had conditions for environmental assessment, public review, obviously compliance with basin plan and other water quality regulations and laws, and monitoring. It's important to note that timber harvesting waiver has worked quite well. Wherever we've run into problems or hitches with the Forest Service, we've been able to work that out. It's gone pretty smoothly in the last 5 years. I want to give a little perspective on the Forest Service in the North Coast region. About 55% of our region is national forest lands. That's in 6 national forests. As I mentioned, they have this overarching planning framework that I'll get into in some detail in a few moments. And also, in 1981, the State Water Board and the U.S. Forest Service went into what's called a management agency agreement. And the really important piece of that is there is a water quality management plan that the Forest Service has that the State Water Board has certified. And that plan includes an implementation process as well as best management practices. So there's what you'll hear referred to in my presentation as a BMP manual, and that is the suite of best management practices that the Forest Service uses in their activities to protect water quality. It also includes a monitoring program for implementation to see that the BMPs are implemented and measure their effectiveness, as well as an adaptive management loop. This plan is being reviewed right now, led by the State Board in a statewide effort to develop some sort of statewide regulatory mechanism for U.S. Forest Service. we are involved in that process. The reason I bring that up is there have been questions regarding, well, how would our proposed waiver kind of fit in with that? Are we involved? And yes, we are involved. Our waiver includes reference to the BMP manual and any of its revisions. So as the water quality management plan is revised, those automatically would be incorporated within our waiver. Also, I attended a meeting on Tuesday with State Water Board staff, the Forest Service, and a stakeholder group. And as I move through the presentation, I'm going to make mention of that. There were a few things that came out of that meeting that I think are important to bring up today. And we have the obligatory fuzzy graphic that I we snatched out of one of the Forest Service publications and blew up. You can see the basic outline of our region there and the national forests that are within it. It's a goodly chunk of our landscape. I'd like to talk a little bit about the U.S. Forest Service guidance. Again, this is kind of an overarching guidance of real importance to us in terms of water quality, or the policy guidance regarding protection of the environment and water quality. Give you a few examples. There are just lots and lots of guidelines and standards for almost every imaginable thing in terms of Forest Service activities. But here's some of the ones that are, I think, very important with regard to water quality. There is what's called an aquatic conservation strategy within the Northwest Forest Plan. There's also a Sierra Nevada Forest Plan that contains a similar strategy called an aquatic management strategy. And that has particular goals that have to do with maintaining the function and resiliency of the riparian system. Very important with regard to water quality protection. So we have included that within the waiver, a lot of discussion of that, a lot of reliance upon protection of the riparian system. Within that aquatic conservation strategy is what we call a riparian reserve program that applies to all riparian areas and all unstable areas on national forest lands. Again, with the goals of maintaining that diversity and resiliency, there are guidelines regarding setbacks or buffer widths, canopy, that sort of stuff. As I mentioned, the waiver relies in large part on a lot of the U.S. Forest Service guidance, so this is a real important one. Other examples, we have guidance for cumulative effects assessment, ecological restoration, erosion control, wet weather operations, those sorts of things. And here is my cartoon attempt to try to distill what's a fairly complex process into one slide. The key message here is that I want to come out of this is that there is a multi-forest guidance, in this case the Northwest Forest Plan, that provides guidance to the individual forests. The individual forests develop their forest plan, called the Land and Resource Management Plan, or LRMP. Within that plan, and according to guidelines, national guidelines, as well as guidelines in the Northwest Forest Plan, can come watershed analysis or watershed assessment, also the designation of key watersheds. Key watersheds under the Northwest Forest Plan are those important fish refugia. But the analysis is not limited to key watersheds, but it's important to note that the key watersheds are a subset of the landscape. Also, a forest can develop a watershed restoration plan that identifies needs in the watershed, inventory problems, prioritize, which then can lead to project identification and design. As a project is designed, BMPs are assigned to the various activities and parts of the project. And then actual on-the-ground implementation or prescriptions in order to implement those BMPs. Good morning, Mrs. Harris. I'll get into the actual proposed waiver. Again, based largely on the U.S. Forest Service policies and that water quality management plan that I mentioned came out of the 1981 Management Agency Agreement. Things that we've included in the waiver ensure transparency in the process from the guidance to the on-the-ground implementation, so that last graphic with the set of steps. I'll get into it a little bit more, but we are requiring the Forest Service to provide those prescriptions in their documentation and in their contracts so that there's a transparency there. There's also an incentive-based restoration planning and monitoring aspect that I'll get into. And at this point, I'd like to make a bit of a comment about transparency. At the meeting on Tuesday, I was asked to speak with a stakeholder group about the idea of using our waiver kind of as a template or outline for a statewide approach. And there were questions and discussion regarding transparency. And I just wanted you, the board, to know that, but also folks in the audience who will be testifying, and some of them were there on Tuesday. The issue came up as to how do we let the public know what we're doing and how our programs are moving forward. And I just want to let folks know that we're absolutely willing to explore that as to how better we can make information available along those lines. What the waiver covers are all non-point source activities. There's a list there. There's a list in the waiver in the findings section. Again, it goes beyond timber harvesting, including roads, grazing, recreation, fire suppression, and restoration after fires, those kinds of things. And it's important to know what it does not cover. Point source mining discharges. So those acid mine yellow boys that you see now and then coming out of a mine at it are not covered under this waiver. Those will have to be dealt with under a point source program. Dredge and fill operations are addressed through the 404 Clean Water Act and our 401 certifications. We are not covering herbicide and pesticide applications in the waiver, although we do have a notification requirement that's carried over from the previous waiver. And obviously stormwater NPDES is a point source that's not covered under the waiver. The actual construct of the waiver includes a set of general conditions for all activities, and then we have broken out two separate categories. Also, emergencies are waived. For instance, firefighting, we quite honestly do not want to get in the way of response to a fire by requiring the Forest Service to apply for coverage under the waiver for something like that, and actually are directed to be responsive to that and sensitive to that. So there are specific emergencies that are waived within the waiver as well. So then we have these two categories, A and B, that are based on risk and likelihood of potential water quality problems. We have some specific conditions for category B and then a monitoring program as well. I'd like to just highlight some of the general conditions. Again, the requirement that the Forest Service comply with its own guidance and the Water Quality Management Plan and BMP manual that was developed through the 1981 MAA and also is being reviewed and modified now. Obviously, to comply with the basin plan, comply with TMDLs. And in requirement, the environmental documents spell out those on the ground prescriptions for a project. Also, there are general conditions for riparian zones to address canopy and shade to meet our temperature water quality objective that relies heavily upon the aquatic conservation strategy and riparian reserve program that I mentioned earlier. There's requirements to address legacy sediment sites. I'll come back to that in a minute. We have kind of an incentive-based program there. Requirements to assess and plan for restoration activities, and again, those contracts that go to third parties need to include the on-the-ground prescriptions and conditions that the contractor will comply with the waiver. With regard to legacy sediment sites, when the Forest Service does a watershed restoration plan, they do an inventory of problems in the watershed, needs, that sort of thing, and then prioritize those. And then, you know, begin to work on those problems, address those problems on a priority basis. What we've added into the waiver is if a project is proposed in a watershed that does not have a restoration plan or does not have an inventory of problems and needs, that they are required to do that inventory within the project area and address those legacy sites on a priority basis. So the incentive part then is instead of being faced with having to do that on every project and kind of a piecemeal basis, if they develop a watershed restoration plan, then that can be included into a watershed context. The severity of problems can be you know, better identified in that manner and then prioritized and addressed instead of the project-by-project basis. We include TMDL implementation in the waiver specifically. There are two memoranda of understanding, one on the Salmon River and one on Scott River. Those have specific tasks and timelines within them. Those are included by reference into the waiver, so compliance with those is required. The Shasta River implementation plan, compliance with that through addressing riparian shade conditions and grazing management. And then with regard to the Klamath implementation plan that this board adopted yesterday, again, there are the riparian shade conditions to address our water quality temperature objective. The idea of sediment site inventories and remediation that I just talked about, both in restoration plans and then on a project basis, as well as addressing grazing management. So then we have these two categories. Category A is low risk. Things like Christmas tree harvest under an individual permit, hazard tree removal, so you've got a tree leaning over a campground. We really don't need an application for that. Forest Service needs to take care of that. That's a safety issue. Hand thinning without the use of heavy equipment. It's been our experience that these kinds of projects are very low impact. Routine road maintenance, and I'll admit this is an area where we need to do a little bit more definition in the waiver. So that's something that will change. So the next version of the waiver is going to have a little bit better definition of that. That came out in comments from the Forest Service, but also in comments on Tuesday from stakeholders, what is meant by that. I can tell you what is not meant by that, and that is, for instance, replacement of a culvert is not routine maintenance. There is a potential for water quality impact and that kind of a thing, and would be covered under the other category. So for those types of activities, we're not requiring an application or notification. No additional conditions beyond those general conditions, and requiring the Forest Service to keep records, include those projects in their BMP monitoring program. If we see a need to look at those projects after the fact or while they're occurring, those records are available, and we can always do that. So Category B is for those moderate risk activities, like fire restoration on a non-emergency basis, the usual timber harvest and vegetation management, road construction, range management, so grazing allotments are included within this category. For this category, we're requiring an application with documentation. There's environmental documentation that goes along with these types of projects, often a NEPA review, so there's that documentation. Also requiring that the best management practices are identified as well as the on-the-ground prescriptions in that documentation. Then we have some conditions that are also specific to that category, as well as implementation monitoring. I'll get into that in a little bit more detail, but basically a project under Category B will receive what we're calling checklist monitoring. So the on-the-ground prescriptions that are put together for that project, as the project proceeds and is completed, the project manager would go through and check those off, each one, as to their completion and effectiveness. And just highlight some of the conditions specific to Category B. Multidisciplinary project review. The Forest Service has a lot of ologists, biologists, hydrologists, geologists, and they can bring those to bear in a multidisciplinary way on these projects. As I mentioned, contract conditions that the underground prescriptions be written into the contract specifically. There are conditions regarding cumulative effects analysis, conditions on grazing, to conduct them consistent with those riparian reserve goals. An opportunity for regional board involvement. This is going to be a new area for us in the North Coast. We haven't been involved a lot in grazing. So we're going to get into it a bit, learn a little bit more about it, be involved in it. There is a schedule for review. The grazing allotments are reviewed on a 10-year basis. And attachment B to the waiver has that schedule for Forest Service in our region. And then there's a monitoring reporting program. There's two pieces to this. One is a landscape level, and another is actual project monitoring. In the landscape level, representative watersheds are selected and sites are monitored within them. There's the concept of paired watershed types of studies. We have not yet worked out how that selection would occur. In the waiver right now, we've given ourselves a deadline of November 30 to get that all figured out. I'd like to be able, if we can, to have that figured out by the June 10th adoption to get those specifics in there. But with that being said, within the landscape level, a couple of different elements to the monitoring. This management activity monitoring, as I mentioned, that checklist verification, and then also random BMP evaluation follow-up. So if there's a BMP in their usual random evaluation that comes out, it's not coming out as working well, as being effective, there's a follow-up to that. And then adding in in-channel beneficial use monitoring. So these representative watersheds being monitored for sediment, temperature sensitive metrics, those sorts of things, including shade and water temperature. Again, those are some details that we need yet to work out, but the Forest Service has a lot of guidance on the actual monitoring and how to do that. It's the how to select the watersheds that we need to grapple with. And the other part of the monitoring program is project triggered monitoring. Now this is another kind of incentive. Maybe it's a negative incentive, I don't know. But basically, if you have a project in a watershed that does not already include in-channel monitoring, then you're required, Forest Service would be required to do the in-channel beneficial use monitoring, as well as the non-random BMP effectiveness monitoring, where riparian reserves are involved. Monitoring shade and water temperature and 303D listed water bodies. So if a project is in a 303D listed water body that does not already have in-channel monitoring. And then what we call retrospective monitoring. So BMPs that have been identified as implemented and effective will be put into a pool and then revisited 5 years later. Are they still working? The incentive piece comes in that Forest Service will need to do this on a project level if there is not in-channel monitoring within a watershed. So the idea is to move towards watershed-level planning, watershed-level monitoring, to look at things on a watershed basis. And as that occurs, then there will be less of the piecemeal project-by-project kind of fixing of things or monitoring. Have a broader watershed perspective. As I said, there are still some things to be worked out with regard to the monitoring program. Primary among those is the methods for siting the in-channel of stations and some of the project-level monitoring stuff, obviously a quality assurance program. Before I wrap up, I wanted to bring up an issue that came up at the Tuesday meeting with the stakeholders. Again, I was asked to talk about this basic approach and its possible applicability to a statewide waiver for the U.S. Forest Service. It came out that there was quite a bit of confusion about how we operate amongst the stakeholders, and seemed to me a need for a better understanding of the waiver and its relationship to our water quality control plans. So I just wanted to mention for those folks in the audience that are going to testify, this might help a little bit. The waiver is a regulatory mechanism, but it's not enforcement. That's a separate piece. As a regulatory mechanism, it's intended to prevent the need for enforcement by providing this framework of conditions and a process to actually comply with water quality law and regulation. So compliance with the waiver obviously would preclude the need for enforcement. And that's really what we strive for. We really strive for compliance. We'd rather not have to do enforcement. However, that being said, we do have, as this board is well aware, broad and powerful enforcement capabilities. And we will exercise them when needed. I think it's important to mention that as a federal agency, we can't directly fine the U.S. Forest Service. However, we can, if there is need, put an enforcement order on the Forest Service that includes in it provisions for leveling a fine in the event there are violations of that. But what I really want to get the message across for people is that the waiver is a regulatory mechanism. Enforcement is separate from that. We have a set of guidelines and enforcement policy that talks about what's a violation, how do we enforce on a violation. We have a progressive enforcement program. So what folks will not see in this waiver is they won't see specifics about the consequences of not doing something in the waiver. That's not the place for that. And I think it's important to note that a violation could be the failure of the Forest Service to follow any part of the waiver, as well as any violation of the basin plan. could also be a violation. So both of those would constitute a violation. So I just wanted to kind of clarify that for folks, and maybe that'll help with testimony that is coming. So with that, I'll wrap up. The purpose today is to gather input from the board, other agencies, the tribes, public interest groups. Then we'll modify that waiver and get it back out for a full 30-day review and move towards a hearing on the 10th of June. And I would take any questions at this point from the board, and then I'd like to introduce the Forest Service.
Any board member questions? Yeah. Mr. Corbett.
Yes, first of all, I just want to indicate how far we've come. It's pretty impressive. You start off with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, a federal agency, separate implementing legislation. Then you go to the Federal Water Pollution Control Act, EPA, different division of the federal government. Then they've certified the state of California, which then comes down to the regional board. And the level of coordination and preventing overlapping regulation, given that very separate history, is quite remarkable and impressive. And I remember when there was NADA, then I remembered when there was the MA, Memorandum of Agreement between agencies, then to us having a general waiver, and then the very first regulatory waiver we have to hear. And I'm especially impressed on, we've improved in-channel or actual water quality monitoring, and that's a huge leap, and I want to thank the Forest Service for that. In past years, there was a little tendency to say, if we follow the BMP, we ground truth it upslope, can't be a water quality problem. This allows a verification and good feedback information for both agencies. And then going after legacy sites, if you study logging, 50 to 70% of all sediment comes from legacy sites. And to go after that, if you think about it, if this 50% of the land here, we're covering 25% in starting to address that issue of sediment problems. I mean, that's one heck of a lot of progress. And then the transparency is greater than it's ever been by leaps and bounds. And we also are starting to deal with the watershed and cumulative impacts. And so all of those, I want to thank the Forest Service, I want to thank our staff, I want to thank, it's a pretty remarkable achievement of interagency coordination that we have before us. I did have two questions. One is, I noticed the beneficial uses listed are shorter and not as complete as those on the private timber waiver, and I assume that was an error of omission rather than intent. And so if that could be reviewed before the next time we hear it, that would be good.
Yeah, thank you.
And second of all, you had mentioned point source mining is excluded. Are there any non-point sources of mining that are excluded from this waiver at this time?
That are excluded or included?
Are there any non-point source discharges by mining operations that are not included?
No.
Okay.
So road building, pads, that sort of thing associated with mining are covered.
And then just to do the framework, no vested rights, well covered, five-year permit, privilege to discharge. Good that you put it in there. Reservation of authority by having enforcement much clearer than in the past, 13267 and 13265, report of waste discharge and gathering information, significant improvements in clarity, and similarly retained water quality standards. Probably the biggest area, and it's very subtle, that I think I would try and address is dealing with burden of proof problems. It is not as clear as in the private timber waiver. And there's a reason why, and that is you're trying to give regulatory certainty by having BMPs, and if you follow that, then you're home free. But that's an inherent tension between to keeping the burden of proof on the discharger. So in a way, you're going to be talking about this two different ways in the same waiver, And I think this one is not as clear as the private timber waiver. And then I would also like you to at least think about, we do not have the ability of the regional board to declare a unique watershed really outside of Forest Service processes. And that used to be in one of the older waivers, and it's in the private timber waiver. And I think if you view that as a little bit of unique risk assessment, unique watersheds, predictably in our region, we've used it twice in since 1969. Probably should have used it three or four times. I think it ought to be in there just as a reservation of authority.
Thank you.
Okay.
So I'd like to introduce Barry Hill of the U.S. Forest Service. We've worked a lot with the U.S. Forest Service. A lot of hard work by staff and our legal staff as well. And thank you, John, for your comments. So Barry Hill, I believe you have a letter from the Forest Service in your package as well.
Good morning. My name is Barry Hill. I'm a hydrologist with the Forest Service Regional Office. I'd like to thank the board for this opportunity to be here, and I'd like to thank Bob and his staff for working with us over almost the past year to develop this waiver. I think he did a great job of covering it. I'm not going to take very much time. I did want to just emphasize a few aspects of this proposed waiver, which I feel are major advances in protecting water quality in the region here. I think from our perspective, one of the things that we've tried to accomplish is to be able to look at things in a larger watershed scale, and this proposal here is going to, I think, accomplish that in a number of important ways. First of all, it's going to cover a much wider range of activities. This is something that we've been pushing for, and I know some members of the public have also advocated that, so I think that that's a great step forward, going from just regulating timber harvest to almost all of our activities on the National Forest System. Second, the link to the restoration, I think, is something that's pretty historic, a big step forward, something that I think is going to provide a much greater level of watershed improvement on our lands. And as Bob described, the monitoring And as Board Member Corbett mentioned, I think it's correct to say that in the past there's been some resistance on our part, but from my perspective, I think that we're doing a pretty good job out there, and the more in-channel monitoring that we can do, we'll be able to demonstrate that. So I'm a big advocate of that. I think that's a big improvement in having this broader scale of monitoring, and I'd like to see that expand, and I think that this incentive-based approach will help accomplish that. And finally, I think a big advantage is that it's going to address TMDL compliance with a much less impact on the workload of both the regional board staff and on ourselves. I think that's a big advantage. I'd also just like to briefly comment on the relationship of this waiver to the process that we have going on right now with the state board. I don't feel that this effort in any way is in conflict with that, and as Bob said, I think we see some real potential for this to be a model for the state process. This particular waiver that you're considering now is, as Bob said, very heavily based on our guidance through the Northwest Forest Plan, so that's something that doesn't extend to all of our national forests in this region, but a parallel process could be taken, so I think there's some real potential there. Sorry, I can't read my own writing. I apologize. And finally, I think one of the things that this waiver is also going to accomplish is to increase the transparency, and this is also something Bob discussed, and I think we're in the past, we've done a pretty good job. We could do better in terms of getting our protective measures laid out all the way from the NEPA to the on-the-ground activities, and this waiver lays that out in a way that hadn't been done before. So I think that's also a big improvement. And so unless there's any questions for me at this time, that's what I had to say, and I do, again, appreciate the work of the board and the staff.
Thanks, Mr. Hill. Any questions, board members?
Yes, first I just want to personally thank you for your leadership. You carried the Forest Service two decades, I think, at least in this effort forward. I wanted to ask on the unique watershed language, which was in one of the older permits. I, you know, asked staff to give a look at that. You might keep in mind that might be a way to address Lake Tahoe considerations in a statewide permit, and if we want to have a template, we got to have it have the requisite flexibility. And the other area where I have the comment but not the suggestion on how to solve it, it does seem to me the fire template may need to be made more generic so that it can handle Southern California fire issues. And I think you're probably better qualified to do that than myself. But I note the issue that if it is potentially a template, we need to have the ability to plug in on those circumstances.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. I also just wanted to echo Board Member Corbett's thanks for your cooperation and participation. The other thing is that the State Board and other regional boards are looking very closely at this as a model, and this is leading the way, and there's been a lot of interest and encouragement with that. So we're looking forward to seeing how this moves forward beyond our region. Thanks. I'd also like to invite other members to come up and speak on this. I've got one other speaker card, and there may be some other folks that are interested in doing that. So if you are, please fill out a speaker card and get it either to Luis or anybody up here at the front. So at this time, my only speaker card is for Felice Pace.
Good morning again.
Good morning.
Today I represent EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center, and the Klamath Forest Alliance. Some of you, I think most of you, will recall that I've been doing that in this waiver process. And, you know, I want to say it's come a long way. What we're looking at now is a lot different than what we were looking at when we started. And I think, and we need to... We got a long way, but I need to say we also have a long way to go because the backup of this system is good BMPs and good BMP monitoring system. And some of the BMPs aren't developed or are inappropriate, and others, the monitoring is not appropriate. I'm going to give you an example of that because I think it's important that we understand these things. You know, I should tell you, I've spent, you know, 35, 40 years on the ground kicking dirt with the Forest Service as an environmentalist, you know, Klamath Forest Alliance, but a group that, you know, had a logger as its president and an ex-logger and always believed in what we called responsible management. But, you know, I learned a lot about this complex system that the Forest Service uses. And right now, for example, they have initiated a new set of planning regs. So what you saw about planning there is a system that is almost always in the process of being revised, but they're looking at major changes in how they do things. And that's a good thing. On monitoring, let me give you an example. Grazing, the Forest Service right now in this region monitors vegetation in the grazing allotments. In other words, they go out and they have these long-term plots in the middle of the grazing allotment where they measure vegetation, and they manage very well for vegetation. They do not assess riparian condition, even though you can do it quite easily from aerial photographs that are regularly available, and they do not monitor water quality on the site or below the site of the grazing. And it's a big problem, and it came real close to going to lawsuit this last grazing allotment review over on the east side of the marbles, and could have. And you may hear more about that from Quartz Valley Reservation, who has done some fantastic work monitoring for us and for the Forest Service up there. But this watershed level monitoring that we heard about this morning, that is fine, but it's good, but it is no substitute for monitoring that is activity focused, very activity focused, like what I just described in terms of grazing allotments. So I think these are two legs of the, you know, I can't say a stool, these are two rungs of the ladder or whatever, you know, but you know, and preventing the need to for enforcement, you know, requires the appropriate intensity of that activity monitoring. It's like truth and verify. And I think it's a good, truth and verify is good, but we got to have strong verification. And we haven't. The reason I emphasize this is I think the staff will, and the Forest Service even, will confirm that we haven't always had that in the past. Fire suppression is in there. That's great. That and grazing right now in terms of lack of management of it, of both in the wilderness, is in my observations, and I've walked every big fire since 1987 in the Klamath Mountains, our number one degrader of water quality in wilderness, where we have the highest, and we got a lot of wilderness, thank goodness. And, you know, the roads, it's all going to hinge on inspect and monitor and repair. If we don't have inspect and repair, which has been the best practice in this landscape forever, from when we first got vehicles, it's been on it. Inspect and repair, whether it's your own road and you go out with a shovel when it's raining, or whether it's, you know, a system of roads, that's the way to manage, and that's what we're going to be pushing for, inspect and repair after major storms and at the end of the rainy season. You repair whatever needs to be repaired. So we're going to be pushing for that. And restoration is also good. We're big promoters of it. I was one of the people that advanced the jobs in the woods way back when idea to the Clinton administration, and restoration economy, sold the restoration economy, and it's great. But it's not compliance. It's not for. It's not a substitute for compliance. You know, it's... if we use, this is a tendency we're starting to see, and I've written actually an article and presented it at a conference last year, a restoration conference. We're starting to see restoration being used as mitigation. And if we use restoration as mitigation for new activities, we stay static. We never get to recovery. That's the problem with it. So we have to make sure that we don't, you know, go along with this trend, which we've seen, frankly, fish and game used to be very good at keeping these things separate, but now we've seen them mixed together a lot the last, you know, 8-10 years. And if we keep going down that road, we'll never get to recovery. And when we get to recovery, we can relax some of these kinds of things a little bit, but, you know, we got to get, that's the last thing that I had to share. I very much like John's burden of proof and unique watersheds. Unique watersheds, that's the last thing. Because when the Northwest Forest Plan came in and you heard about the aquatic conservation strategy, there were two kinds of key watersheds, Tier 1 and Tier 2. Tier 1 key watersheds were the ones that themselves provided key refugial habitat for, you know, at-risk salmon and other species like that. Tier 2 was cold water. They didn't themselves have that much habitat, but their cold water was critical. There was a bureaucratic decision made not to have any Tier 2 key watersheds in Northern California, and I was told about it at the time, and it's well known. You won't find a Tier 2 key watershed in Northern California, but there are some. For example, on the Scott, the Canyon Creek and Kelsey Creek and Boulder Creek that come out of the wilderness, those are keeping our fisheries alive because they got cold water. So that's enough. Thank you for your indulgence. If I went too long, I apologize.
You're doing fine.
Okay.
Thanks, Felicia. Anybody else? Okay. Bob, would you like to close up with anything?
Yeah, I guess we're done for now. I just wanted again to acknowledge your staff and your legal staff and the Forest Service for all the hard work we put in. So I expect to probably have a few emails and comments back at the office. We'll take comments that we've received today and rework this thing and get it out for full public comment. And see you back in June.
I had one suggestion. We have references to the MAA, and there's real question in the legal validity of that document. Mm-hmm. I don't mind the history. I like water quality history, oddly enough. But I think we need a more generic support that specific agreements between the United States Forest Service and the Regional Board are strongly encouraged to cover site-specific forest conditions when necessary to develop when necessary to further detail BMPs. Because when you're dealing with 7 million acres, if you get a general rule that covers every environmental problem, nothing happens. If you get a general rule that allows the agency to carry out its purposes, which we clearly have to do that under federal law, it tends to not be able to cover some of the more acute problems. And I do think one of the leadership roles of the Forest Service and our staff has been to go to MOUs. Now, I didn't use the word MOU. I used the word agreement because my understanding is there's a dispute between MOAs, MOOs, and MAAs as to which is going to be the proper future agreement. So I, rather than try and guess that, I just think if we said specific agreements. But I think that's a leadership position both that we need in this region and also statewide. So if you could add some kind of language like that, it would be most appreciated. And I had one last thing. I'd like to refer to legal counsel and staff to work on the language of Section 5, because what I heard on the non-point source in mining, to me, doesn't quite gel with the number 5. And rather than maybe it can come back less nuanced, or we can understand and make sure they reconcile.
Appreciate that. We did wrestle with that. We'll wrestle with it some more.
Okay, thanks. Look forward to seeing you in June.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, board's going to take a break. We will get back at quarter after.